Darren Hagen is a composer originally from Milwaukee, but a lifelong resident of New York City. As a working composer in the city, Hagen worked on Broadway and pit orchestras. He worked as a copyist for composers such as Elliot Carter and David Diamond. Among his teachers are Leonard Bernstein and Ned Roram. He's received commissions from the New York Philharmonic and the Philadelphia Orchestra, and his most recent commission from Seattle Opera is an opera called Amelia, premiered by the company in May of 2010. Hagen was the composer-in-residence for the Kentucky Opera's Composer Workshop in October of 2010. We talked about being a working composer, a little about teaching, and his new opera. Darren, you are not only a full-time composer, and that's without a doubt a luxury, of course, and you know that in these days, but you're also very involved in boards, and I don't want to say administrative side of art, but you are. You're involved in the administrative side of several organizations, YADO, the Lottie Lehman Foundation. Is it important for you as a composer to do those sorts of things, and is it something that you would encourage other composers to pursue?
Yes, I would, actually. One has to recall that Giuseppe Verdi was a legislator. He was a member of the Italian Parliament.
The Parliament.
And spent much of his life as a politician. It's something that composers, because we have to have a lot of organizational skills, we have to keep our parts together. We have to deal with a lot of different kind of people, like promoters and presenters and conductors and soloists, heaven forbid, and singers. because we have these people skills, we tend to be tapped for service. And when you do service as a composer, it's not really administrative, like, you know, pushing papers around or deciding who's going to do a job. You serve on a board because you are either serving as a conscience or as an not as a gatekeeper, but as an reminder of certain levels of taste or craft or technique. And you do them not because you particularly want to, but because it's a responsibility. So I do it for YADO. And for the Lottie Lehman Foundation and for Opera America and certain other organizations. And I enjoy it very much because you get to a certain point in your life and you want to make sure that, not that things are done right, but that things are protected, certain institutions are protected because they protect our art form.
Mm-hmm. You are in a way serving the organizations that have served you in your early career.
Absolutely. Correct? I was brought along with great generosity in my 20s, and now I'm in my late 40s, and I get it.
Mm-hmm. Composers are not always thought of as being people persons, that we have this, there's this incorrect mystique that we're hermits and that we toil away, you know, in dark offices and studios all day long to churn out our latest masterpiece. As a teacher, and you do teach and you have taught it in university settings, is that a part of what you impart on your students, is that sense of being a people person, being someone who is a responsible human being and someone with a strong work ethic, and being involved with boards, that I think is a part of that that persona, as being someone who is a strong administrator in some regards. Do you teach that to your students?
I have private students, yes. I taught for many years at Bard College, then I taught at Curtis and Princeton and so forth. And about 15 years ago, I stopped teaching, and I only stopped teaching in an institutional setting because I got to the point where in my life, my personal value system was such that I wanted to spend my time doing rather than teaching. And I had the skill set that was needed to compose music quickly enough and expertly enough that I could meet deadlines. Some people just are slower workers. Shostakovich once said, think slow, write fast. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of thinking and I write fast. Yes, a composer has to be a grown-up. Often they are the grown-up. But we labor in a world where many times donors and even presenters yearn for a romantic ideal of what constitutes the creative artist. They want us to be something that we're actually not. I don't know a single successful composer of concert music or commercial music who isn't profoundly organized, profoundly disciplined, and very grown up. But on the other hand, people do want to hear about inspiration. They want to hear about how much you've suffered. because there is also a part of the human makeup that is appropriately, I think, resentful of the fact that Mr. Hagen goes around composing all the time when I have to have a job. And in fact, I don't get to compose all that much anymore. I spend, 60% of my time with my son and my wife, thank goodness, and probably 20% of my time overseeing professional concerns like publishing and so forth and teaching. So about 20% of my time is actually spent composing. I used to spend 80% of my time composing. What a composer learns in their 30s and 40s is how to spend 20% of their time doing 80% of what they used to do. Mm-hmm. It all gets squeezed into a shorter amount of time. Some people are cut out for that, some are not. Mm-hmm. It's not a good or a bad thing. It's just what it is.
I would dare say that working on an opera, and Amelia being the most recent one for you, mm-hmm. is as intense, if not more intense, than any other employment out there, be it a lawyer or a doctor or anyone in sort of a 9-to-5 typical job. It's a very demanding process, writing an opera from beginning to end and everything that is involved there, right?
Well, my brother was in orchestra management for many years, and when he went home at the end of the night, he went home. And he used to be quite cross with me when I would say, oh, I never get to go home, I'm always on the job, until he retired and became a freelancer. And now he doesn't get to go home either. And he has a lot more compassion for my lifestyle. Nothing is more engrossing to me than writing opera because it is the Gesamtkunstwerk. It is the complete artistic statement. We don't have to talk about the glory of opera. Opera is just great. Opera also happens to be the one place where every skill that a composer has is used. Writing choral music, chamber music, orchestra music, ballet, under music. So you have to be a good film composer in a way mm-hmm. to be a good opera composer. And the thing about opera is that when you wrote this great music for a scene, no one can turn it down for the dialogue. There's no producer turning the dials down.
The director
down.
Can't cut it.
Exactly.
It's there.
Leonard Bernstein told a great story about how he wrote this beautiful kind of Liebestod for Marlon Brando and Eva Marie Saint, I think, where they're going to kiss on the rooftop. And the music's building. And the engineer is pulling the levels back and back and back so that we can hear Marlon Brando go, ugh. Never wrote another film score.
Speaking of Amelia.
Yes, we have, but speaking of Amelia.
Of Amelia.
Oh, sorry.
Right, no. It's in fact, that leads directly to my next question about Amelia. It received quite a bit of critical success in Seattle, around the country, the New York Times, and around the world. I wonder, though, did Amelia leave you wanting? You've written several other operas, three others, I believe, full.
Six operas total.
With Amelia, did it leave you wanting more opera, writing more opera?
Of course. Oh, it's utterly exhausting. It is entirely captivating and all-encompassing. And when it's over, you are entirely spent, creatively and physically and emotionally. And after a few months, you desperately want it back again. There's an old quip that life is short and opera is long, but production is all too short. And the great operas, whether you're a stage director or a composer, take years to write, years to organize, and then all of a sudden you have to get it together because of money in a very short amount of time. That shortness of time intensifies the transaction to such a degree that extraordinary things are required of people. They have to take very scary journeys inside of themselves in order to unlock the performances that people are paying hard-earned dollars to witness, because those performances unlock certain transformations within the audience members that they came to experience. And it's very hard work, but completely engrossing. After when Amelia went up, I was entirely wrecked. And like a cat that's been stroked too much, I felt overexposed. I didn't want to see these people again for years. And then about 3 weeks ago, that was last May, about 3 weeks ago, it took about 6 months to get over it, I was ready to go back in there. Not because of the satisfactions of it, but because once you go there, you have to go back.
Mm-hmm. At what point in your career did you realize that that you were a composer and you could do that as your life choice, your career choice, and you didn't have to teach, you didn't have to work at Starbucks anymore, you didn't have to drive a cab, you know, Philip Glass.
You managed to hit two jobs I have done, yeah. Well, I remember when I was a first-year student in Philadelphia at the Curtis Institute, Bill Smith, William Smith, who was the associate of the Philadelphia Orchestra, saw me conduct one of my pieces with the student orchestra, and he tapped the piece for a performance by the Philadelphians. And it was an extraordinary moment for me. It was the first time the orchestra had played a student work since Samuel Barber's School for Scandal. Mm-hmm. So they made a big deal out of it in the press. And the music critic at the Philadelphia Inquirer, whose name escapes me at this very moment, sat me down and interviewed me and asked questions. And he said, "Do you realize that you're in the show?" And I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Do you follow baseball?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, when somebody moves up from the minors to the majors, at a certain point they realize that if they hit a home run in the majors, everyone's there. It's the same home run." And that was a very, very important moment for me. And I suddenly realized I had a chance. Up until then, I thought maybe I would be an orchestrator or something like that. I didn't have a vision of myself as a composer. I thought that, well, there, suddenly realized it was possible to do this. Still, I thought the only way you could do it was to be a commercial artist. But that is when I started looking toward models, career models of folks that I had met who actually had done it. That's when you have to reach out to biographies of people like Gershwin, that is when I asked Ned Roram, you know, how do you make a living, or Virgil Thompson, and the various people. I'm old enough now that I remember these men, and I knew them, and I asked them questions. I would talk the way that you do when you're in your early 20s, and you could call up anybody because you don't know any better. I called up Virgil Thompson. I said, "Mr. Thompson, can I come over and talk to you about music?" He says, "All right, baby, you study with Ned, sure." And I went over, and you know, there you go.
You knew no better.
I just walked toward the knife because I didn't know how sharp it was.
Well, and I'm sure it paid off.
Absolutely. I learned a lot of things, and I've always very carefully and with respect observed the careers of my brothers and sisters because it interests me. There are some composers who are more interested in and adept at business than others, and their careers reflect that.
You worked, copying music. You worked arranging on Broadway. So you've done the grunt work. You've been in the trenches, so you know what that's like.
I have. I was a copyist for 6 years on Broadway. I copied music for David Nyman, Ned Roram, Leonard Bernstein, Giancarlo Menotti, Elliot Carter, Ezra Latterman. Oh my goodness, for a lot of people. And there's nothing, this was in the age of hand copying.
So, sure.
So you and
before
I,
computers, yeah.
Yes, you and I, my friend, are the last generation of composers who shall have copied music the way that it was copied in 1700. Mm-hmm. Then computers came in and changed all of that, but I was doing that. And then I was a pianist in pit orchestras, Broadway pits, and a vocal coach, and I taught composition, what Virgil Thompson used to call the musical skills racket, mm-hmm. and the associated skills racket. And then I was married for 10 years to someone, and when that marriage ended, it was a point in my life where I realized that I had an opportunity for personal reinvention. And it was either now or never that I would really just go for surviving as a freelance composer of non-commercial concert music. And, that was not easy.
It's a leap of faith.
It was, because I started turning down copying jobs and accompanying things and little ghostwriting projects, we say with a grin.
ghosting for someone we won't name, of course, or many
several
people
we won't name. But those are associated skills, and it's these are our honor and our dignity to have done these things. Once you have your complete skill set, then there are associated people skills that have to do with accurately reflecting who you are as a person. You can't put on friendliness with somebody you don't like. You have to be honest about who you are. If you love music and you love to make music with other people, if you can keep focused on that, that will take care of you, and it takes the curse off of any personal interaction because it's not about you anymore. For instance, Leonard Bernstein was always at his most beguiling to me when he was conducting, because then it wasn't about him. It was about him being a conduit for Mahler or Hindemith or whoever he was conducting. When he would talk about music, you could almost see the moment at which he was listening to himself say something. You could see him slip in and out of self-awareness. And what we all yearn for is to lose ourselves in the work, because then we're at our best. So that's what I try to do professionally now when I've been around the block a few times.
Darren, it's been a real pleasure.
My pleasure, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you, my friend.
You too. That was Darren Hagen, a composer from New York City. You can find a link to his website at wuol.org.